And welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Today, Indigenous Peoples Day is being observed in more than a dozen states. Maryland isn't among them, but the movement to ditch the traditional Columbus Day holiday is growing in favor of celebrating the unique contributions that Native Americans have made and continue to make to our nation. Several cities in Maryland have replaced Columbus Day with the holiday to honor Native American history, including Baltimore, Washington, D.C., and more than 130 other cities, counties, and school districts across the country do as well. On Friday, President Biden issued the first ever proclamation of Indigenous Peoples Day, which was considered a major stride towards redirecting the focus of the federal Columbus Day holiday towards recognition of Native American peoples. It said, in part, "Our nation celebrates the invaluable contributions and resilience of Indigenous peoples, recognizes their inherent sovereignty, and commits to honoring the federal government's trust and treaty obligations to tribal nations." Columbus Day is a federal holiday established by Congress. The president also issued a Columbus Day proclamation in which he acknowledged, quote, "the painful history of wrongs and atrocities that many European explorers inflicted on tribal nations and indigenous communities." Joining us now is Daisy Francoeur. She is a member of the Oneida Nation and the Director of Strategic Partnerships and Communications at Cultural Survival, a nonprofit group that helps indigenous communities protect and preserve their cultural traditions. She joins us on Zoom from Chicago. Ms. Francoeur, welcome. Thank you.
Hello, this is Daisy Francoeur calling in from the unceded lands of the Potawatomi and Ho-Chunk people. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for your time. We appreciate it. Tell us a little bit about your organization, Cultural Survival, your mission, and the work that you do to advocate on behalf of Indigenous peoples.
Sure. So at Cultural Survival, we are a 50-year-old Indigenous rights and Indigenous-led organization. Our mission is to advocate for Indigenous people's rights and support their self-determination, cultures, and political resilience. We're headquartered in Cambridge, Massachusetts, but we have staff worldwide.
And what is your take on the current public awareness, the level of public awareness, and the level of appreciation of the issues affecting Indigenous peoples. The fact that there are now 14 states that celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day instead of Columbus Day, for example. Do you see this as progress, or do you see this as an indication that things are going much too slowly? What's the importance of the fact that some jurisdictions like our city, Baltimore, have in fact replaced Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day? How do you place it in cultural context?
Definitely. So I certainly want to acknowledge all of the different leaders and communities who have done so much work to build this movement, right, of replacing Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day, and really this growing movement also of land acknowledgements. But what needs to be understood as this is the floor and not the ceiling, and much more work needs to be done to really address and right the wrongs of history. And we can't look to just one day to spotlight Indigenous peoples and the issues that we face, but rather this should be a time where non-Indigenous peoples and allies really take this as an opportunity to set their goals and intentions for the year ahead of how they will continually support Indigenous peoples and their local tribes in their areas beyond just one day of activism. So moving beyond performative activism to continual daily forms of solidarity and support.
You mentioned when you joined us a few minutes ago that you were on land, that certainly was not owned by the American government or the city of Chicago initially. When it comes to acknowledging those facts, you mentioned that, people do that more often now. I mean, you hear theatrical and musical performances that say "Welcome to the show tonight," and acknowledging the tribes and nations that at one time occupied that land. Is that enough, the acknowledgement, or is there the hope that at some point something else is going to happen? And if so, what would you envision that being?
I think it's definitely a step in the right direction, but again, it's the floor and not the ceiling. To acknowledge the land that we're all on is to give visibility and acknowledgement of Indigenous peoples, our lives, past, present, and future. And we're not just beings of the past, but we're here today. We are modern, contemporary people, and we are self-determining our own futures. And to do that is to also have access and ownership of our own lands and territories and natural resources. And so I'm sure many of your listeners have heard of the Land Back movement. You can look up hashtag Land Back on social media, and there's tons of knowledge and resources out there that explain the importance of Indigenous peoples having access to our traditional territories. 80% of the world's biodiversity exists on Indigenous lands and territories, and we are the stewards. We are the best stewards of our environment. And as you know, we're living in a state of climate chaos with record highs, record high temperatures across the United States. And Indigenous peoples, not only are we the best caretakers of our land, but we are the knowledge holders of how to steward our ecosystems. And so in addition to land acknowledgements, we really need to increase this movement and resources to return lands back to Indigenous hands.
Daisy Francoeur joins me. She is a Native American activist with Cultural Survival. They're based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. It's a nonprofit that supports Indigenous communities around the world. On this Indigenous Peoples Day, we're talking about the tribal nations that have faced all sorts of problems at the hands of the American government. What do you think should be done about that? 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR. And to follow me, by the way, it's @TomHallWYPR. So, Ms. Francoeur, there are, according to the International Labor Organization, roughly 476 million Indigenous people around the world. Fewer than 2% of that population lives in Northern America. So relative to the rest of the world's population of Indigenous peoples, we have a relatively small percentage of them, I suppose. But when people use the term Indigenous people, how do you define that? And is there a clear-cut consensus about what that means and who is included in that rubric?
That's a great question. And I think that's a question that many, many people ask. And I think what's really important to understand from someone who may not identify as Indigenous is that they do not have the right to self-define who Indigenous peoples are and what those kind of, what that definition is. And it's really important to understand that because the United States government has enforced this erasure tactic in the form of blood quantum, in how Indigenous peoples in the United States especially are defining citizenship and their enrollment based off of a certain blood quantum amount. So this was a policy that was introduced to Native nations in the United States by the federal government. And that was designed to eradicate us. And so I think the foundation of understanding who is Indigenous is that it is self-determined. And so there are numerous resources out there that kind of, especially with the United Nations, that allude to how to define Indigenous peoples and what are some of those commonalities. But I think that is it's kind of a scary territory to get into, to defining Indigenous peoples because of the history of eradicating us and using such harmful definitions.
What do you make of the president who, for the first time, as I mentioned at the top of this segment, made a proclamation of Indigenous Peoples Day? He also made a proclamation of Columbus Day, which is traditional for the White House to do every year. The significance of this proclamation for Indigenous Peoples Day, and what do you think, in terms of the federal government and the White House, the next step should be?
Again, I think it's a step in the right direction. I will still say that Columbus Day and Indigenous Peoples Day are still, they coexist and are understood both by the federal government of what October 11th today is. But I think in terms of next steps, the United States federal government really needs to issue an official apology of all of the atrocities. I think in some of President Biden's speech, he acknowledges the past and those past atrocities, but it does not include the ongoing genocide and attack on our communities that still exist today from the federal government, from policies from the Bureau of Indian Affairs, as well as other local and state policies that are, again, designed to eradicate us. So this official apology, I think, would help be a catalyst for healing that needs to take place, not only across our communities, but everyone in the United States who is affected by colonization. I think furthermore, like we see with Deb Haaland in a position of power, we need more Indigenous peoples in positions of power. We need a seat at the table at the local level, at the state level, and at the federal government level. And we also need to see, like I had mentioned earlier, more return of land, both private and public lands, back into Indigenous communities' hands. Especially as we're addressing different social issues and environmental issues like climate change, that we really have to center Indigenous peoples and their leadership as we're addressing these issues. And on top of that, it's also resourcing their leadership. So I think this proclamation, again, is a good step in the right direction, but there's a lot more work to do.
And you mentioned ongoing genocide against Indigenous peoples by policies of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. You mentioned Secretary Haaland, who's now running that agency. That's obviously a very serious claim, so let me take it seriously by asking you to give us some examples of how, you know, genocide continues to be perpetrated.
Yeah, that's a great question. And there's a lot of answers, one that we don't have enough time for. But one of the leading issues that is faced across our communities on Turtle Island, what we also refer to as North America in the United States, is the murdered, missing Indigenous women's epidemic, where 1 in 3 Indigenous women will experience violence and sexual violence in their lifetime. There is tons of data that has been curated by Indigenous communities about this issue, but the federal government still fails to capture this data, and that's done so intentionally. In addition to that, like we've seen in Canada about the residential schools, here in the United States, there still has yet to be an acknowledgement of how boarding schools was designed to assimilate our communities and take children from our communities and beat them, the culture out of them, right? And to assimilate them into civil society, quote unquote. And so there still needs to be an official apology of that. And that instance colonization continues to be felt today through intergenerational trauma. And so we're seeing, you know, the impacts everything from suicide rates with our young people to physical health problems like diabetes to, you know, just a large scale of issues that we're facing as a result of those layers of history. And then lastly, I'll say another ongoing form of genocide is the violation of our rights and our free, prior, and informed consent of when extractive industries are coming into our territories, building pipelines, polluting our waters, and really encroaching on our food systems. And so we're seeing that right now at places like Line 3 in Minnesota, and we're also seeing that at Thacker's Pass in Nevada. And there's tons of other examples, but those are just a few.
In our last minute, do you think that the movement for Black Lives, the focus on social justice that a lot of people have developed that hadn't developed that focus in the past, do you see an intersection there with the country's attention on social justice issues as helping advocacy for Indigenous peoples?
Absolutely. I think there's an ongoing wokeness, I guess you could say, that is happening in the United States. And I think especially across BIPOC communities organizing, it needs to be understood that Indigenous sovereignty and Black liberation go hand in hand. And when we see one community of color thrive, as does another. And so we have to take a holistic approach to addressing these social, political, and economic issues.
Daisy Francoeur is a Native American with Cultural Survival, a Cambridge, Massachusetts-based nonprofit that supports Indigenous communities around the globe. We will have more information about that organization at WIPR.org/midday. Ms. Francoeur, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, we'll look at what the great journalist Gwen Ifill called missing white woman syndrome. When girls or women of color go missing, they don't get the same attention that white women do. We'll talk about it with Dr. Danielle Slakoff, a professor in the Department of Criminal Justice at Sacramento State University, Zach Summers, a Chicago-based lawyer and criminologist, and Natalie Wilson, a co-founder of the nonprofit Black and Missing. So hope you'll join us for that conversation here on Midday tomorrow. Stay tuned now for Here and Now. That's right after the news at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day.
You're listening to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.